Well, good evening, and welcome to our village board meeting on Monday, October 9th at 7 o'clock. If I could ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Corsini.
Here.
Trustee Cargi.
Here. By phone.
Okay, you're not here yet, Tom.
Yeah, you're not here.
Oh, okay.
Hang on.
I mean, you're here, but you're not really here.
Spiritually.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conti. Trustee Hennig. Trustee Gibbs.
Live in person.
President Aducey.
Yes, here. Okay, if I can then get a motion to...
Motion to allow Trustee Cargi to participate telephonically.
Second.
Great. If I can get a vote on that?
Voice vote is fine.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, are you here, Tom?
Now you can say here.
I'm here.
All right. Well, welcome to our village board meeting.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, next on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance. So if I can ask everyone to rise and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks. Okay, we have one public comment, and it's Greg. You want to, if you would mind, come to the podium and just state your name?
My name is Greg Kenster. I distributed this. I need to get going because my daughter's at soccer.
Okay.
I won't read the whole thing. You have it there. Essentially, we had a fire. Took a long time to get things moving. Things are moving. House has been in my family 100 years. Nancy's Dylan's son lived there for 25 years, and we're just asking for time to get it going. We've got the plans went to the Historic Preservation Commission, and things seem to be rolling at this point. It was the hang-up was the insurance company, but they came through finally.
Okay.
Any questions?
Mr. Kenster and I have a meeting scheduled for Thursday. There are really two components to this. Number one is a zoning component. The home was a two-flat based on the damage and the value of that damage. The non-conforming grandfather use can no longer exist, so the home has to be converted back into a single-family home. Correct? I think we're going to talk about that on Thursday, but I believe that's been referred back to you through Mr. Santoro. And then the village had some concerns about some of the condition of the lack of some building code compliance. And so part of our discussion on Thursday will be to talk about that as well.
Okay.
So we're asking for time to address that, but we are going to the meeting. We have a meeting scheduled with Mr. Santoro and Mr. Powell. So, yes.
Yeah, I would think that's the proper process and procedure.
We're just asking you.
Yep.
Because you're the board. Some concerns have been raised. So we're asking you for time. That's all.
Okay. I think the best what we need to do is have the administration work with you, and then if you still can't have agreement, which I'm hoping that you all will come to some agreement within our code, you certainly have the capability of coming back
right.
to the
yeah.
village
I mean,
board.
At this point, to be clear, we're waiting. There are just two things. One, Mr. Kenster doesn't have to appear to the HPC, so the home is not significant, so you do not have to get HPC approval for any of that. And then at this point, it's a matter of your architect submitting plans for building permit review. So once those right. are in, we would review those and then address that accordingly. And then
I know I don't need to go in front of the Historic Commission. They're power is limited anyway, but they expressed an interest, and we said okay, and we gave them the plans. So it's one of the oldest buildings in the village.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why not?
Right.
Okay. I gotta go. I'm sorry.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You. Enjoy the soccer game. All right, that is all for public comment, so we'll be moving on to elected officials' comments and announcements. So if maybe we could start with Trustee Corsini.
Thank you. Happy Columbus Day to fellow Italians and to everyone else. I wanted to just report that on September 27th, we held a finance committee meeting. We had the auditors present. We reviewed the comprehensive annual financial report for 2017, the draft. We went through and asked several questions. Joan presented some of her information in the memo that everyone received, and the committee unanimously approved bringing that to the board tonight for acceptance. So that was on the 27th. We also discussed that we are going to have our joint pension board finance committee meeting, and that date has been scheduled for the 2nd of November. So we're going to have the actuary and the fire pension board and the police pension board and finance committee present to discuss pension funding options. There's a possibility that we're probably going to have to make some revisions to what we currently have. And then on the 19th of October, we have our Lake and Park small group meeting with Eric and the members from the EDC to discuss the RFP-RFQ process for Lake and Park. That's all I have to report. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Tom, Trustee Cargi?
I got nothing.
Okay.
Yes, just one. Actually, Kathleen and I, we attended a meeting relating to the River Forest Service Club, which will also be known as the River Forest Civic Association. But I would like to draw the fact that the speakers were our Sustainability Commission. Katie Brennan, Sue Crothers, Julie Moeller made a presentation, which was very well attended by most people. But no one knows exactly what's going to happen in terms of the organization. So that they're still trying to figure that out. But okay. That was it.
Thanks. Glad you guys attended. That's great. Thank you. Kathleen, anything?
I was just going to jump on that also, saying that their presentation was very impressive. And I think it was directed a little more towards community members and things that they could do to contribute to the mission of the Sustainability Commission, and just really interesting questions and conversation. If any of you have the opportunity to hear them speak in a public situation, it was very much worthwhile. And a plug for the River Forest Civic Association. I think that their mission is important.
Yeah. Good. Thanks, Trustee Conti.
I'm sorry to miss that. Couldn't be there. And nothing to offer. I was also disappointed not to make that meeting. I do think they're trying to fill a need. I know they're trying to, by changing the name of the group, try and make it more inclusive so more people in the community would participate and have an opportunity to learn about the great things that the village is doing, like our sustainability efforts. So that's a good thing. So hopefully it will continue. My only other thing is I want to thank John Anderson and Public Works for putting in the Do Not Block intersection sign at Bonnie Bray and Chicago Avenue. Hopeful that that will help some safety and traffic flow issues, assuming people read it and follow it. I understand that IDOT is also looking at changing the timing at Chicago and Harlem. Is that right? The light timing? I thought that was mentioned at one of the last Traffic and Safety Committee meetings.
Possibly, I'm not sure.
Okay. Only because that light, that green is so short, so I imagine a lot of people coming down are more focused on making the light than whether or not they're blocking the intersection. So if that was adjusted, that might help. But again, hopefully the sign will work, so thank you for getting that up.
Just a gift.
As a non-Italian, happy Columbus Day, ladies, three of you, correct? Go yep. Cubs.
Cubs.
Up 2-1. These are very important things that I'm bringing up. And in regard to the Happy Columbus Day, we have two kids in the audience tonight. You might be learning this in class. I did a little Googling today. Cortez discovered South America, Vasco da Gama, yep. India by sea, and Ferdinand Magellan, the first one around the world. All good dudes. I hope we don't forget about them.
Yep.
That's all I have.
Great. Thank you. In fact, Mike, you'd be with all of that, they were all at the parade today, believe it or not, represented. It was really kind of cool.
They look good after
I actually went to the Columbus
500
Day.
Years, right?
Yeah. I went to the Columbus Day Parade, and it was well attended. The weather, of course, cooperated. It couldn't have been a better day to have a parade. It was a nice place to be. A few other things. On September 21st through the 23rd, I attended the Illinois Municipal League Summer Conference. Again, it was well attended. Many great sessions about municipalities. Something I encourage all the trustees to go to the conference next year. It's well received, and a lot of work goes into many of the programs. I actually hosted a session on receivership, and our very own Greg Smith also hosted and was part of a session as well on consolidation efforts. So there's it's a great venue, it's a great program, and it's something that I encourage everybody to go to. I know, Carmela, you've gone in the past. And then on October 3rd through the 4th, just 2 days, I attended the West Central Municipal Conference in D.C., and that was a great success as well. I had the opportunity to meet with Congressman Lipinski, but more importantly, I personally met with Senator Duckworth and had a conversation with her regarding our Harlem Viaduct project that we have successfully been rejected 3 times on. And in fact, the Tiger grants are the only grants that are really available to us. Infrastructure, many things in the federal government, like the state government, are going to be slow to come about, and we'll probably not see much of an infrastructure bill at the federal level either. But there is Tiger grants, which are specific for kind of shovel-ready projects. And she was I felt very confident that her office will help us. And I sent along to Eric and Oak Park and Forest Park the name of her deputy director and legislative aide that she personally introduced me to say this is the person that will help you hopefully shepherd the fourth application through, which is on our agenda tonight. So other than that, that's all I have been up to. So we'll move on to the next item, the consent agenda. I do want to take one off, mm-hmm. which is this one, the proclamation.
Jay.
Right. Thank you.
So
I have my glasses on.
Anybody else?
We just a couple of the things. You have revised minutes in front of you.
Oh, yep.
And then for accounts payable, and then item 6A, there was an additional $400 that should be added to 6A. So the accounts payable amount, so the net amount doesn't change. It's $1,872,994.46. And then the TIF vendor payments to be withheld for separate consideration should be $2,750. And we'll get that clerk, we'll get that all in the minutes, so you don't have to take note of that. But when you vote tonight, that'll be the exception.
So then the motion can be to approve consent agenda items A through I,
right.
and K through N, including the changes to the
as revised,
minutes for September 11th.
Right. That's correct. Thank you. Do I hear a second for that motion?
Second.
Okay. Trustee Conte, second. All right. Any discussion on the items A through I and K through N as revised?
Eric, I was just wondering about the applications for the sprinkler systems. I think this is the first time I've seen this in 5 years. Is that new? I mean, is that something we're currently enforcing?
Yeah, so you've done a couple of these as it relates to fences.
And right, so, I remember that.
Yeah, so typically what we've done is we're requiring this for anything that's installed in the right-of-way. So the past practice of the village typically had been if you had a irrigation system in the right-of-way, it was just put in, end of story. And as we found through the sewer project, we have no record of those, and so a lot of those lines were hit. And as a general best practice, you want to know exactly what's in your right-of-way, and then this is also, it really serves two purposes. One, it eventually goes back into GIS, so there's a record of that, and then it's also recorded on the property as well, so there's some record of knowing that this has been permitted by the village.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. Susan?
And my question is the hypothetical result of getting that Tiger grant, would we be ready to use it and go forward, and how long would we be able to keep it before the, I'm just curious.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that all becomes part of the grant award. So where you're at right now is they're still wrapping up the what I would call the eligibility studies. So they haven't – where's John? Where was in the corner. They technically haven't done phase one engineering yet, have they? Or is that what that is?
I thought that was.
Well, they've done preliminary design. I don't think they've done phase one.
Right. So you would still need phase one engineering.
Which is where this would apply?
Well, no, you would hope it would be for everything. So the goal would be they're asking for somewhere in the tune of $20, $25 million right. to pay for phase one engineering and the construction.
Okay.
But, I mean, it would take probably another year to 2 years to design it. To take that, all the eligibility and due diligence work they've done, and now convert that into, then you got to get permits, you know, yeah.
Okay.
So that would be, if we're lucky enough to get the grant, we would then work with the feds to come up with a timeline for all that.
Got it, thanks.
Okay, great. Any other further questions? Hearing none, if I could ask the clerk to take the vote on the consent agenda.
Okay, would you like me to read it first?
Oh, read it, absolutely. I'd love to read it.
Consent agenda A, regular village board meeting minutes, September 11th, 2017. B, executive session minutes, September 11th, 2017. C, special village board meeting minutes, September 18th, 2017. D, finance and administration committee meeting minutes, September 27th, 2017. E, waive a formal bid due to competitive RFP process and award bid for computer equipment replacement to SHI for an amount not to exceed $25,738.10. F, authorize the village administrator to execute a right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement with property owner at 559 Franklin Avenue for a sprinkler system in the public right-of-way. G, authorize the village administrator to execute a right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement with property owner at 7970 Oak Avenue for a sprinkler system in the public right-of-way. H, authorize the village administrator to execute a right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement with the property owner at 538 Bronnie Bray for a sprinkler system in the public right-of-way. I, resolution in support of an application for a United States Department of Transportation Tiger Discretionary Grant, Tiger Grant. K, monthly department reports. L, monthly performance measurement report. M, accounts payable August 2017, $1,873,394.46. N, village administrator's report.
And that corrected amount is $1,872,994.46.
Thank you. Now you'll take the vote.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Yep. Right.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Next up is, if I can hear a motion for the proclamation designating October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
I move to proclaim designating October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
I'll second.
Great, thank you. So we have a plaque, and Linda Conway, who's part of Sarah's Inn, is here. And if maybe you come to the podium. Okay, so I'm going to read this.
Please, thank you.
I'm going to try, because I really don't have my glasses, but I think I'll do a good job. So it says here, whereas domestic violence is a prevalent social problem that not only harms the victim, but also negatively affects the victim's family, including child witnesses, friends, and community at large. And whereas domestic violence knows no boundaries, it exists in all neighborhoods and cities and affects people of all ages, racial, ethnic, economic, and religious backgrounds. And whereas 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience domestic violence sometime in their lifetime. In Illinois alone, there are approximately 115,000 to 125,000 domestic crimes each year. And whereas the Victims Economic Security and Safety Act provides workplace protection specifically for victims of domestic or sexual violence, and as for victims' abuse experience at home often follows them to the workplace. And whereas the health-related costs of rape, physical assault, stalking, and homicide by intimate partners amounts to over $6 billion every year, and the annual cost of lost productivity in the workplace due to domestic violence is estimated to cover to be over $800 million annually, with nearly 8 million paid workdays lost per year. And whereas only a coordinated community response will help to end domestic violence, and whereas Sarah's Inn, a local domestic violence agency, serves over 10,000 individuals annually through its mission to improve the lives of those affected by domestic violence and to break the cycle of domestic violence for future generations. And whereas Sarah's Inn, together with their network of supporters, volunteers, and community and professional partners, work to accomplish their mission through comprehensive intervention services for victims and their families, violence prevention programs that educate children and adolescents on healthy relationships, and training to create a skilled network of community advocates to ensure an appropriate community response to violence. And therefore, I, Catherine M. Ducey, President of the Village Board of Trustees of River Forest, do hereby proclaim October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month to raise awareness about the issues related to domestic violence and the effects on families and communities, and to urge all community members to learn how to take action this month by partnering with Sarah's Inn, and to urge all victims to seek help by calling Sarah's Inn 24-hour crisis line 1-708-386-4225 or visiting their office. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was great to have you. It's great to give you this opportunity. Yeah, with the whole board, please.
Say a few words, and then we'll take a picture.
How's that?
Thank you so much. This really means so much to us that you guys take the time to do these proclamations. It meant so much to have Chief Weiss represent the village at our first annual community kickoff event last week. He did a wonderful job speaking. Truly. And it was such a nice event, and we hope to continue to grow that. We appreciate all of the village's support. Both Linda and I are residents of River Forest. My husband grew up here. Linda's lived here many years. So obviously, it's duly important for us that the community in which we not only work in but live in supports our organization and the work that we're doing. So thank you so much.
Yeah, Tom, make sure you smile.
You can Photoshop me in later.
River Forest and Keystone Park next Sunday at 1 o'clock. So if there's something, you're available, want to bring your families. It's just a 2-mile walk around River Forest. It's really nice. I think this is the fourth year that they're doing it, so it's a great way to kind of get involved and show your support.
This Saturday?
Sunday.
It's so Sunday, 15th. October 8th.
October
15th. 15th. We've already gone through it.
What time? All right. 15th. What time is that?
At 1 o'clock.
And then can you also go to the microphone and give a plug for your fundraiser that you're going to have.
Oh, yes, of course. And our fundraiser is Saturday, October 28th at Oak Park Country Club at 7 o'clock. And so we have sponsorships and tickets are on sale now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Awesome. Thank you so much.
I have a quick question about this proclamation. Is there any way that we're planning to share information soon, since we're at the beginning of October, and I know our newsletter already went out,
either
on Facebook or Was it in the newsletter?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I missed it. Okay.
We'll get this picture on Facebook tomorrow
right.
with Susan's information.
Okay. Could we include the Sunday walk, perhaps information
yeah.
to that or a link to their website?
Yeah.
Sure. But it was in the body of the... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. what all the purple ribbons are for, too, if
right.
you see those
right. Exactly. Well, very good. Thank you. You don't have to say, so there's no obligation.
They get it.
They get it, right. They weren't going to stay. All right, moving on. So the next item is 6A, which is the consent item for separate consideration, the approval of the North Avenue TIF vendor payment for $2,750.
I move to approve the North Avenue TIF vendor payments for $2,750.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion, questions regarding this payment?
Just one comment. As in the past, my law firm, I like to disclose my law firm represents the school district 90 and school district 200, so I'm going to recuse myself from voting on this matter, and I'm going to ask the clerk not to call my name during the vote, please.
Okay. Very good. Any further questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to take the vote, please.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennig.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay. Very good. Okay, we're moving on to recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. We have two items under the Traffic and Safety Commission. I don't have my... Yeah. So I assume this is approval, right?
Right. Yeah, so the first one, we would need a motion yeah,
to recommend. Right. No, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay to approve an ordinance to approve a recommendation to convert four existing parking spaces on the south side of North Avenue between Lathrop and Ashland to two-hour time limit spaces.
So we'll get the first one and then the next one.
So someone could just say
can
so.
Can I get, have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. So moved. Okay. Here a second?
Second.
Okay. So let's discuss the first item and then.
Okay. So, the request came in on 7605 North Avenue to consider converting one of the four spaces in front of the business to an ADA space and adding two-hour limit to the remaining three spaces. The Traffic and Safety Commission discussed that. And they decided to convert all four spaces to two-hour limit parking. The requester was fine with that, and it doesn't prohibit the person with the handicap placard from parking there, but they would just monitor it in the future and see if that space would be needed. So the commission ultimately decided to recommend the two-hour spaces for parking for all four spaces there.
So can I ask a question on that? Mm-hmm. What are the spaces behind that building for? Are they not available to patrons and employees in the lot behind the building?
The Lido building?
South of the building?
I don't know what those are for specifically right now.
But
I read something that that's owned by one of the other property owners and that the doctors aren't allowed to use those spaces.
Because there's several parking spots back there that are open for people to use, but I don't know what the agreement is, whether the front part of that building is owned separately and they own the parking lot. Do we know any of that, Eric?
Not off the top of my head, no. Sorry.
No, I know the concern with these four spaces were that people were parking there in the morning and staying there all day. The police observed that, so that's why they wanted to make these two-hour parking spaces.
I know that the neighbors on Ashland complained about the parking on their block, but are they aware that we plan to turn these into two-hour-only spots? The concern I have is that in looking through the petitions, it appears that there was only like five River Forest residents that signed the petition.
Yes.
The rest are more obviously patients of the doctors. So do people on Ashland know this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, it was also discussed at that meeting, the Ashland parking situation. Most of the parking that was going on there was Loyola, and so it was communicated to Loyola to have their people park in their lot, and that seems to be working so far. But they can readdress that later on if people tend to park in those areas again.
But to Tom's point, if the people that are employed in these two, well, actually three, because it's Dr. Macaluso and then two other doctors. If they employees can't park there, and they can't park behind the building.
Oh, I thought Tom was talking about Ashland.
Well, I know.
No, but
then they're going to move to somewhere, so they're going to either have to go park on Ashland or they're going to have to park on the streets, or unless they go to St. Vincent's parking lot, I don't know if they have an agreement with them.
The Loyola lot, I think, was available. They just weren't parking there. That was my understanding.
So the Loyola lot is available for employees of these
of Loyola.
Three?
No, not, no.
Of,
not
all right. Those. That's what I'm saying. The three employees of these three medical buildings were that they're going to now be displaced to go somewhere. And that's my question: is are they allowed to park behind this building? Which, you know, there seems to be some ample parking spaces back there. I think that's what you're saying too, Tom. Right? Where are they going to go?
Well, really, more my concern is: did we get input from residents, or is this just, you know, people that work on North Avenue are looking to accommodate their customers?
Right.
Well, anytime this issue is brought up, residents are notified of the issue nearby. So they got a postcard that it was going to be discussed. So
was that the 500-foot postcard?
Yep.
The what? How wide was the postcard distributed?
Oh, right, yeah, the 5x5 postcard.
No, 500 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we
couldn't understand you there, sir.
So if the overwhelming majority of the people on these petitions are patients of the doctors, and the employees of the doctors are who's going to be displaced, it's kind of a catch-22 here. If we're going to tell the four employees that are parking on the street they have to find somewhere else, and they can't park on Ashland because we already addressed that, do we require, are there any restrictions in town or requirements for businesses to provide parking like residences do?
Yes.
Okay. So if there's three businesses
mm-hmm.
here, how many parking spots would these three businesses be required to provide?
It would depend on the number of employees. Right now, you have to provide one spot for every two employees and one spot for every 400 feet of public space. So I don't know specifically how many spots would be needed for those businesses without doing some analysis.
It was my understanding, listening to the meeting, that it wasn't necessarily employees of the doctor's offices, because one of the doctors came to that meeting and was requesting this. Their observations is that it's perhaps from businesses other places parking there. So it's not going to...
But still, we still
have
restrictions from
I mean, you're still
going to
displace four
parking.
People who are parking there all day. We don't know why or where they're from, though.
But if these are supposed to be used for purposes of patronizing the businesses, to me, 2 hours seems to be reasonable.
Oh, yeah. I don't think the reasonableness... I'm still curious as to what they're supposed to be supplying as far as their employees. Like, where are these people parking now, and what is the requirement? Because I think that's going to be...
That's what I'm trying to, in a roundabout way, get at. If the village ordinance dictates what buildings are supposed to provide for the employees that work in that building, are we hitting those numbers? And if not, why not, and what are the building owners going to do about that lack of parking? That's because, I mean, the residents, we're pretty strict in town. If somebody wants to build a building, this is how many spots they have to provide. If we have the same thing for commercial, which I'm getting the impression you're telling me we do, are they meeting those requirements? Before we jump in, I'm totally okay with the two-hour parking thing. That makes sense from a village point of view to promote business. But if these buildings are not meeting the village requirement, then it seems like we need to fix that problem, too.
Agreed. And I think, Mike, you've hit the nail on the head. There's really two issues here. And I agree with you. I think we need to address the employee parking issue. But I don't want it to get confused with what's before us, right? But
no,
I agree.
I'm okay with approving this tonight.
So
but
really,
we need to do a little follow up on what's going on.
So
at
I think
those
that's
buildings.
A great suggestion by
because, like Carmelo said, who's parking on the south side?
Let's
in the lot
them.
That's owned by those properties.
Right. Agreed.
So in the letter from Dr. McKenzie, she says that her employees park on side streets.
Well, okay. Now we know. I don't know if that's the right thing to do.
I'm just telling you.
Okay. Well, we need to know. We need to know, you know, one, if that's true, and secondly, if that's what we want. So.
Right, and we can definitely look into that. I mean, I would say one general comment I would make, and North Avenue is no exception, is that parking is a challenge for some of these businesses that come in, and we spend a lot of time working with, especially dental, orthodontics, all those types of places, trying to work with them. And you see what Elmwood Park is doing with their restaurant row.
Property.
Right, exactly, trying to find more off-street parking, and that would be something, my guess is, at some point in our future, as we try to redevelop North Avenue, you need more parking.
I just have one more quick question. When we did that cutout, is that the max amount of parking spaces we could put there just because of the traffic signal? Like, we couldn't put an additional parking space to the east?
Oh, you're talking about squeezing another space on the North Avenue?
Yeah, I don't know, because that's a newer sidewalk. But I wasn't sure when we actually did that cutout if that was the most we could put.
It looks pretty tight.
Because of
I think that happened when Loyola redid the building. Mm-hmm.
I can't see.
That little grassy thing on the west side of the four.
I mean, because it's definitely helped, but I didn't know if that was the max amount of spaces we could.
It almost looks like it.
The challenge you would have, too, is I'd have to look at the pace route. My guess is that's probably a bus stop as well. So there's probably people that stand over there.
I think the bus stop is in front of
St. Vincent's. So it's on the other side.
Right across from Alpine.
Do you see that?
20
feet?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't see the room, Carmel.
I'm sorry.
It looks pretty tight there.
Yeah, so Chief is saying you can't use the first 20 feet from the intersection. So it seems like that's the most we can squeeze out of that.
That's what it looks like. All right. Well, good points by Trustee Cargi and Corsini and Gibbs, and we will... I think that's a good question, and I think really the answer is going to be once we begin the, I hate to say this, but the TIF North Avenue, and we start really looking at redevelopment and finding more of a strategy, a parking strategy for North Avenue, is this going to get a little bit clearer for us? But good questions. Okay, so any further questions regarding the two-hour parking request? Hearing none, let's go ahead and take that vote for this item.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So one little side thing while we brought this up. Tom, you had mentioned, I did count it out. There's 60 signatures provided to us. 53 of them were people that live out of town. Does anyone else at this table wish that these reflected River Forest people?
Well, actually, Mike, John answered my question. I just want to make sure that the residents knew about it.
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable with that kind of margin of people that don't live in town asking us to change our rules.
So. Yeah, but I would think if the neighbors that are most affected by the decision didn't have any problems with it. You know, I mean, if they know it's not a petition, they know it's not a petition. But my concern was just simply that people knew about it.
Yeah. And Tom's right. You don't want to.
I'm just using this one as an example. We've had other issues come before this board that have had not this drastic of an example, but a lot of non-residences. So, yeah,
but Mike, just so you remember, though, this is a business that serves everybody.
I'm not talking about just this one. I'm talking about in theory.
Okay.
Do we want these to reflect more our population, not people that don't live in town? That's what I'm asking you guys, how you feel about it. You know how I feel. Yep. I'm just using this as an example.
Okay. And I would just give you my two cents. I think when it really comes to a business, I think we have to look at their clientele. But I think what Trustee Cargi asked was a good question. Is okay, we're okay with all of this, or at least I am, so long as it doesn't affect our residents on side streets. And that was his question, which I think is a good question for all of us. So we don't want to move the problem somewhere else. So,
again, I'm just using this as an example. Any other instance where petitions are provided to us, would this board be interested in having more River Forest signatures than not? Just forget about the parking spots. I'm talking about any petitions that come on a River Forest form.
Well, what is the process right now when we get the petitions? I mean, is it people that are able to, I mean, a lot of times if it's on a block, they're going to ask for all of their neighbors.
Right.
But there have been instances where we've had people that don't even live near the area or, you know, even in town.
It's issue dependent, as you know. If it's right smack in the middle of our town and it has something to do with our residents, of course we want River Forest residents to be on that petition list. But in this case, it doesn't bother me at all unless it bothers somebody else. I know I heard you, Mike, it bothers you, but it doesn't bother me.
I'm just using this one as an example. I'm talking about
So what I'm saying is topics. It's issue dependent. I don't think we should say across the board we should have over 50% of these signatures be River Forest, because I just don't make it. To me, it's an issue dependent. Like, this would make little sense it to be, you know, more than 50% River Forest, because it really is more clientele for the business. So, and I think that's what we've been doing, actually. I think that's how we've been handling our petitions here. Okay, let's move on.
I think maybe let's look at it as they come in.
Yeah, it's
issue dependent. See if it's, you know, if it's something where it's going to affect residents and you have more people outside of the village weighing in on it, then I think that's something we need to evaluate when we're actually looking at these issues.
I was just curious what everybody else thought about this one.
I agree.
Well, I'm just going to echo that. I do agree with Kathy. I think it absolutely has to be a case by case, because if it's something that has an impact on the residents, then yes, we want. And I know you're saying you're just using it as an example, but if it's a River Forest business, and the only way for that business to be successful is to have these outside folks come and use it, and if they can't use it because of a parking issue, then we have to be concerned about that and hear from them. Right. So I think
we can do both. We can look at this, and then we can look at future requests and see how they are affected by whatever petitions are. So it's just being cognizant of that.
Because when I see petitions coming for me, the first thing I'm looking at is where they're from.
All right. Moving on. We've got the 7A. So I need a motion to approve that. I'll have somebody read it versus me reading it and repeating it. Approve recommendations unless you want me to read it.
I'll make a motion. I'll turn my microphone on. I'll make a motion to approve the recommendation to renew existing crosswalk striping and formally request that IDOT install two-sided crosswalk signs and advanced crosswalk signs at the intersection of Lake Street and Keystone Avenue in River Forest.
I'll second.
Okay, very good. So, John,
yes.
You're up there still.
There have been ongoing discussions with IDOT to improve the pedestrian situation at Lake and Keystone. At one point, it was brought before them to install the flashing beacons similar to the one at Lake and Forest. They said that would be too close to the intersection of Lake and Thatcher, and it would cause stacking backing up into that area. So there have been a number of options thrown around, and Traffic and Safety Commission has made the recommendation to install signage there to renew the striping and formally request that IDOT install two-sided crosswalk signs and advanced crosswalk signs for the crosswalks at Lake and Keystone.
Do you have a picture? What's a two-sided crosswalk sign?
So right now there's not any crosswalk signage there. There's striping, and then there's the yellow curbs. So what would go there now would be the diamond yellow signs, and on each side would have the pedestrian crosswalk sign.
Oh, with the person
doing
this.
Exactly.
Okay, but it's not going to be flashing. It's just going to be...
No. And it would have the little arrow, you know, pointing down to where the crosswalk is.
And then by law, right, Chief? I mean, if there's a crosswalk indicator there, people are supposed to stop.
They're supposed to stop if it's marked as well. And we do enforcement over there periodically. But yes, if there's a crosswalk now, it stays upgraded.
Right.
Yeah, we do enforcement over there.
Okay.
All right, I'd like to make an observation in this. This is the minutes from the July 19th meeting of the Traffic and Safety Commission. And under public comments, it's Bob Ray of 830 Keystone has concerns about the crosswalks at Lake and Keystone. He's seeking some proposed solutions from the committee to the concern he raised a few months ago, which was, what, maybe April he must have come. I don't know what it doesn't say. So here we are, October, having just had these conversations with IDOT, just trying to find a solution to a pedestrian problem that is going to be children crossing Keystone. I mean, that's not a stop sign. It's not parking spaces. It could, you know, the worst case scenario is something horrible would happen, and this man's coming back for the second time to Traffic and Safety in July to approach us for safety issues. And to me, this is far too long that it took to come to our board and then to get to IDOT and to try and resolve the situation is unsatisfactorily as we can, because it's IDOT and we don't have that many options. But I want to bring it to the board's attention and to the administration's attention and to the Traffic and Safety Board's attention that if something like this comes up and we're talking about children and pedestrians, it needs to be assessed and evaluated and responded to a lot sooner than 6 months later.
Is there a way to fast track these that seem like more of a...
Well, he said this man, Bob Ray, had to come two times.
Right, I'm just saying for traffic and safety to meet, is there a way to fast track issues that may seem a more significant safety risk?
You raise a good point, Susan. I mean, and sometimes or often there's good reason for it. I'm not quite sure in this particular case there might be. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would like an opportunity to ask some questions before make a blanket statement about something that's taken place. The one thing I will say is that this has gone on for a long time. So we've had numerous discussions. We've actually put signs up on Lake Street, and IDOT has made us take them down. Yeah,
it's close to my heart, this Keystone thing.
I totally get it, but so we have been actively engaged in working with the state in trying to find solutions that they will work with. The problem many times is that it's hard to have those interactive discussions. So many times it requires us to submit things. It sits over there at months at a time. And then it finally comes back, and they just will say, well, no, we can't do that. And so then we have to go back, and it becomes a circular game, right? And so that's the only thing I would say is just our experience has been, it's been a challenge working on those issues. And it's not as though we have ignored them. In fact, as I've pointed out, we tried the flashing beacons. They said no. We put up signs. They made us take them down. So we've been trying to chip away at it. But in this particular issue, I can find out if there was another reason for that delay.
Just jumped out at me that he had been here.
Well, I mean, at one point, Susan, we had those ones in the middle of the street with the rubber base.
Yes.
And the state made us take them down.
Yes. Yeah. But your issue is fine. That's all good and fine. There's some things that, you know, we try to fast track and things get our hand slapped. But I think your point is this particular issue about crosswalk.
Trying not to make a blanket statement.
Right. Yeah, she's talking about this statement, this issue. And so, which I think is a good question, and I think Administrator Eric Baum has answered it appropriately. Let's look into it. And if there's something that can, you know, sometimes sense of urgencies, priorities and things like that happen. So we'll look into it. I think it's a good question.
Just wanted to bring it up.
Yep. I think it's fair.
It jumped out at me.
It's fair. I mean, and there might be a good reason.
So is this everything we can do without IDOT yelling at us?
Basically, yeah, because you get the approaching signage as well, saying the pedestrian crosswalk is coming up. And you also get the signage right at the pedestrian crosswalk.
Okay.
That's the advance sign.
Right, the advance sign.
I always thought we should build a bridge.
Yeah.
Or a tunnel. Yeah.
Or a tunnel.
Yeah.
Talk to them with parking.
Yeah.
But now you also said that IDOT is who will actually install the signs. Is that right?
We can request that they install it, but we'll likely install
You'll
it
be
ourselves.
Able to.
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes it's better to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission.
All right, so let's hurry up and vote on this so we can get going.
Well, and we, like I said, we put it up,
right.
And they told us to take it down. So.
And it's improved dramatically over the last 10 years.
Oh, my God.
I mean, when I first got on the board, like eons ago, I think it was the very first thing that I said in the public statement was there's issues. I almost hit a kid, I don't know how many different times, on Lake Street. So I know that it has improved dramatically. And, you know, had this person been there, he would have had a heart attack by now. But.
Eric, I'm sorry. When they ask you to take it down, do they send you a letter or do they just call you?
I think the guy was actually driving through town.
He called.
Tell him to put it in writing next time.
Okay.
Because the state is immune. I'm not sure how far we are, but I'll let our village attorney ask that. But it's also public. If something was to happen, God forbid it doesn't, but if we have something in writing from them, there'll be more of a public humiliation for the state. I know how they work. So tell them to put in writing.
Okay.
In the meantime, I would suggest you continue doing what you're doing and then take it down when they put it in writing.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, right. Ask for forgiveness and permission. Right?
There's
good
nothing
point.
To ask for. You never said anything.
All right. All right. All good points. All right. So I think any no further comments or questions, so we'll go ahead and take the vote on this.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Before we move away from the traffic and safety, I know one of the items on the minutes was talking about parking on Ashland by the Loyola business, and it seems like it's getting better because you've written the letter to the Loyola. I do have one request, though, because when you're driving down North Avenue, you're going to go south, making a turn onto Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
If there's cars parked on both sides of the street, it becomes much more narrow. So if there's a car coming north and you're turning south, there's no place for two-way traffic there. And if you can look at, on the east side of the street, putting no parking here to corner, because people are parking all the way up to the stop sign, so that at least it gives you some area
to
maneuver.
From Loyola's driveway to North Avenue.
Right. So I don't know, you know, there's a no parking here to corner on the west side of the street, I believe, but I don't think there's one on the east side of the street. So if you could just take a look at that,
okay.
Maybe that'll alleviate some of the crunching at that corner.
Okay, we'll
Thank
take
you.
A look at that.
There's no way you're getting a fire truck through that.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, so moving along, Finance and Administration Committee, 7B. We'll need a motion to accept the recommendations of the 2017 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
So we did have our meeting.
This is a motion, right?
Yeah.
Right. So,
okay,
if
so
I
I'll make the motion.
Okay, thank you.
I move to recommend to accept the fiscal 2017 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
Okay.
A second.
Okay.
And just to, we need to discussion on this. We had our meeting. And Joan wrote a very detailed memo that everybody received. So I think at this time we should ask Joan to get up and have a discussion, go over those memos. And then Scott Termine from the auditor is here, the partner. So he's going to be able to answer any questions that the board has. And I wanted to, before Joan speaks, say once again thank you. Also to recognize you that we got an award again for our CAFR, so congratulations on that, and again,
budget.
Thank you for our budget. Sorry for all your work, all your work that you've done for preparation and getting these audits together, and your staff and Eric and everybody, all department heads. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of people involved. So Cheryl does a lot to help with the audit and all the staff in the finance department and throughout the village. So. Anyway, as Carmela mentioned, we did already go through the audit in detail with the Finance Committee, and BKD was there as well and presented their management letter. I'm going to just touch on some of the main points that are in my memo, and then I'll have Scott come up and he'll present the CAFR and the management letter for you. It's a SAS 114 letter. Feel free to jump in if you have any questions while I'm speaking. On page one of my memo, there is a summary of general fund revenues. Overall, actual revenues exceeded budgeted revenues by $819,243, or about 5.35%. This is actually mostly due to higher license and permit revenue, though. There was an increase in residential, commercial, and institutional construction activity, including the new Concordia Residence Hall and the townhomes on Madison Street, which brought in big dollars. So that we also had a lot of additional residential activity and commercial activity, so there was this is a huge volume. Expenditures by department are included on the bottom of page two. General fund expenditures are slightly lower than the budgeted amount for the fiscal year, but are up about 3.8% from the prior fiscal year. The chart on page three shows
the total revenues and expenditures for the general fund and the impact on fund balance. Fund balance increased $939,795 in the fiscal year. Our financial policy requires that the unassigned fund balance plus the amount restricted for working cash be at least 25% of the subsequent year's expenditures. As of April 30th, 2017, this amount is at 47.2%, which is an increase over the prior fiscal year. In the prior fiscal year, we were at 44.8%. Again, this is primarily because of the higher building permit revenue. It's not tax revenue. It's not recurring revenues. Building permit revenue is really not a recurring revenue source. On page 4, I've got a summary of the water and sewer fund activity. Water and sewer fund net position increased by $581,286. We had a 4% increase in billed consumption due to the warmer summer weather conditions. We've been seeing declines in consumption, and now we've seen a 4% increase in consumption. Rates were increased 8.7% on May 1st, 2016 to cover higher operating costs and the Northside Stormwater Management Project. We made our first IEPA loan payment in June of 2016. And then the City of Chicago did not raise rates during this fiscal year. I want to encourage all of you to read the transmittal letter and the management discussion and analysis there at the beginning of the report. They provide a great summary of the financial information. They explain all the sections of the CAFR and describe what various financial activity that took place during the fiscal year. I'll be happy to address any questions you all have on the report, and then I'll have Scott come up and present the report and the SAS 114 letter.
Questions from any of the trustees? I have none.
Joan, will the TIF fund be a separate line item in next year's report?
It is in this year's report. TIF 31 is separate.
We didn't
separate them out in the past because they weren't actually established. Once it's established, they're separated out. So TIF, the Madison Street TIF, is now separated out in the report. And then when North Avenue is, assuming it gets established, it will be a separate fund in the report. It's in the capital projects funds.
Can you tell me what page that's on, roughly? Like, I didn't see it. I believe you, I just didn't see it.
On page 109.
I probably didn't get that far.
Did you read the whole thing?
The front statements are more summarized information. The individual fund financial statements start, you know, in like page 90 something. So those are the funds that you're used to looking at and working with the budget. The reporting in the front of the report is required. GASB reporting, but it sort of summarizes and pulls things together and includes long-term liabilities, not stuff that we normally look at when we're budgeting and looking at financial reports during the year. So the reports towards the back are the ones that you're accustomed to seeing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Joan. And thanks to the full board, of course, for having us back to perform the audit again this year. As Joan alluded to at the end of her discussion there, a lot of the discussion that's covered in the memo focuses on that fund level information. The other layer of financial information that's included in the CAFR is what we refer to as the village-wide financial statements. Which is where we take all of the village's funds and combine those together and then also roll up, as Joan alluded to, the capital asset and long-term debt activity of the village. What becomes very significant at that layer is that is where you start to see the village's pension liabilities get captured. You may recall that was a significant change last year with the new GASB standard that came on and into effect last year. So that was the first time it actually hit your balance sheet. For a number of years, it had kind of been buried in the voluminous footnotes and other financial information that's presented here. So that is now included within your report. So as Trustee Corsini alluded to in the Finance Committee, one of the points of discussion that we had was in regards to a lot of the actions that the village is taking and looking at funding policy and items that are relevant to that pension liability. So that's certainly something to continue to keep front of mind. I would echo Joan's comments then on the management discussion analysis. You've got hundreds of pages of information here. The management discussion and analysis is a really nice overview that provides good narrative and comparative information for you to refer to there. So with this year's report, as in prior years, we're able to issue what we refer to as a clean or unmodified opinion on the financial statements, which means that we were able to satisfy ourselves that everything is properly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So that's exactly what you're looking for under the circumstances. And then, as is customary with our audit, we also issue, in addition to the financial statements, what we refer to kind of generically as the management letter. In this document, if we had any significant internal control-related matters to convey to you, those would be presented here. Happy to say we did not find any significant deficiencies that we need to report. There are a number of new GASB standards that are coming into effect. One very significantly is the new standard that's going to relate to the village's other post-employment benefits. That's going to be very similar to the pension standard, but for the retiree health care portion. So that liability will start to hit the village's financial statements in a couple more years. The other comment of note that we spent some time discussing is just the importance of cybersecurity-related concerns. And I know from discussions with Joan already that the village is considering some additional action in that regard. So we are happy and available to help in that effort as well as if needed. So I know this is a lot of information to take in, but happy to address any questions that any of you might have.
Does anybody have any questions for Joan or our audit team?
I mean, once again, I mean, I know it goes, there's a ton of work that goes into this document and a ton of work that goes into the preparation and delivery of it, and both from, you know, staff and committee. So certainly, I certainly appreciate all that. And you know, you can't dispute the numbers. I think they're trending well for us. I think we're good fiduciaries of our money, I believe. I mean,
yeah. So Joan alluded to the one significant factor there was the 47% in light of the village's policy. That's a great position to be in.
Right.
And then, as I referenced, that pension liability is really an issue that all governments are struggling with now. So that's something that, again, from the discussion that we had, seems to be certainly top of mind in regards to some of the actions that I think are coming up. So,
I know, Carmela, you mentioned something about taking another look at our pension policy. And I mean, not to move this direction to that, I'm just curious as to why. I mean,
so we've been, this is our third year into the actual policy that we implemented, and we were doing a phase-in with respect to making sure that we were getting to the funding levels that we wanted to be at. And at the beginning, we said all along that we were going to evaluate this. It was an ongoing process, basically, and this would be a good time to re-review that. There was some questions about the numbers and where we were at, and I think Joan will be able to answer this a little bit better. But Fire Pension now has a new investment manager, mm-hmm. So at this point, it's probably time for us to get together and, you know, do a touch base, touch bases with the pension funds. And obviously, we know this is a cooperative process, which, you know, we're really proud of the fact that we are able to all get together and come up with some consistent funding ideas and objectives. So, and Joan will give you a little bit more information about the actual specifics on the actuarial report that I think is giving us, you know, more reason to meet.
So. Fiscal year 19 is actually the last year of our transition plan. Right. So we're supposed to have reached the pension funding policy level at that point. Right. We're in pretty good shape on the police side, but on the fire side, we're quite a ways away. So instead of having like under $100,000 per fund increase on the fire side, I think it would be closer to $300,000. So that's why we need to go back and look at it and try to see if there's something that we need to change in the funding policy, because we have to be able to afford these. We don't have limitless power to tax and get extra money for the pension funds. I also wanted to look at how we kind of got where we are and why we didn't reach where we expected to be.
Well, it wasn't our contribution, I assume.
No, it wasn't our contribution. So it's other factors. Right. Part of it is they've made two changes to the mortality assumptions that they use. They changed them once, and then they changed them again to more specifically match the population of the particular plan and the ages in of your additional, your members and your retirees. So those had a negative impact on both of the plans, and the fire investment earnings weren't quite what we would have liked. They were not as high as the police's earnings. One pension fund position was eliminated, which should have really helped us. So I guess we need to kind of understand why we're not in a better place. So I've asked them to come out and sort of explain what caused us to not reach our goal. And then we also need to look at what our investment rate assumption is, because we're going to have the investment consultant come out and go through and explain that. I've talked to her. It's the same investment consultant for both plans now, so she's going to be coming to the meeting as well. And there might be a change in the interest rate assumption that's being used. I'm not sure what she's going to come up with. So that's going to affect it. But the both policies weren't exactly the same.
Right.
So it might be that one needs to be changed and not the other or what have you, but it has to be something that we can afford. And
right.
I think Lauterbach and Amon is a very, they're very strict. They're probably using more stringent mortality rate assumptions than other actuaries may use. And that's affecting us as well. So
what's our policy in general about, you know, I know in the past we've had discussions about, you know, how one calculates the liability.
It's a thick document.
Right.
So there's a lot that goes into it. I'm sure Todd will come out and discuss that with the board.
Right.
But, yeah, there's a lot of different assumptions that go in, salary assumptions, you know.
But at the end, we still have the capability of having a discussion around it.
Well, right, and this has always been a fluid process. It's not like set in stone. So once you set a policy, you're always going to go back and have to revise it after a certain amount of time based on all these changes and assumptions and changes in your position with respect to your actual fund.
As you recall, when we started, we were only contributing the statutory minimum. So we've come a long way.
Right.
Here, I applaud you all. Yeah, I mean, we have now come a long way. We did the right thing. So,
right.
You know, I applaud it. It seems odd that, you know, once again, with a certain pension fund, we're...
Right.
We're still struggling.
One of the options I was going to ask him to look at would be to possibly... how a one-time contribution would affect future annual contributions. So if we possibly could take some of our general fund reserves or capital improvement fund reserves and make a one-time payment 1 year, how would that then reduce future contributions so they were more affordable? So that's probably one option that's we're going to look at and will be presented as an option for the funding policy.
Yeah, and well, this first meeting is more of a workshop, basically. We're going to come back and, you know, put our better heads together and try to figure out where we were at, where we've come, and where we need to go. So we'll have that meeting. We'll probably have a second meeting, and then, you know, we'll come back to the board with all of this information and the actuaries. So, you know, everybody's going to be involved in the process, and it may be just tweaking some little things to be able to move us along. But, you know, it's... our responsibility to just make sure that we're on the right track, and our contributions have been everything that we set out to be. So it wasn't anything that, you know, it's not like we're not taking our contributions.
We did exactly what we were supposed to do. So
it's just sometimes your funds change based on the personnel, based on people coming and going or dying or, you know, not, or retiring. And so those all have an effect on on the numbers. So it is a fluid process. It's something that you obviously want to evaluate on an ongoing basis. So. So that's,
yeah, we knew
that's
we were planning on coming back and revisiting this. It's just important that we do it now as opposed to a year from now, because we're going to start working on the 2019 budget. So we need to have a number to put into the budget. So that's why we're addressing this now, so that before we get into budget, we know where we're going and what we're doing.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, real good. Other than that, I think the system we're in good shape. So. Anybody have other questions, comments for Joan, our auditor? If not, we'll go ahead and vote on the motion.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes, great job to the team.
Yeah.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes, and I do want to say, as a new trustee, having really gone through this more thoroughly for the first time, it's a lot of information, a lot of good information. I know it was a lot of work, as everyone has already said. Did a great job, learned a lot. I know I have a lot more to learn, but.
So thanks again to all of you for the opportunity to be here, and again to Joan for all of her assistance with the audit.
Great, thank you so much. All right, moving on, we have no unfinished business, and we are at the new business, and this is the motion to approve the lease agreement with the West Suburban Consolidated Dispatch Center.
So moved.
All right, got two. So we'll take Trustee Vasquez and then Trustee Gibbs. All right.
So before you tonight is a lease agreement with the West Suburban Consolidated Dispatch Center. And so my memo lays out for you kind of the background and kind of how we got here based on how the center had started with Oak Park and River Forest. And it was more of an internal discussion that River Forest would house the center and Oak Park would take care of a lot of the internal service functions for the center. Over time, that has changed. Those internal service functions have now been either outsourced to third-party administrators or are being handled independently by the center. And as the center grew, we thought it would make sense to memorialize the fact that they are here taking space, using space that is owned by the village. So we put together a fairly simple lease agreement for them. It is a initial 3-year term. It does give them a 15-month out, and that's primarily because if we eventually find somewhere else for the center to go and they leave on their own accord, they're going to need time. Obviously, you just don't pick up and move a dispatch center overnight, so we want to make sure they had plenty of time to get out, even if we decided we wanted to go in a different direction. The base rent includes $20 a square foot for the main office space and $15 a square foot for the space in the basement that covers a lot of their radio equipment. And so about $20 a foot puts you in a good Class B type rents for this. We also factored in some costs. They use our backup generator that we have here at the rear Village Hall. And then so we came up with an amortization of what that would look like and then threw in some lump sums for the phone system, email servers, and other utilities. When it's all said and done, you're at a gross rent of about $65,000. They do provide some service to us that they do not provide to other communities, so they are essentially our front desk after hours and answer the phones for us out in front, as well as answer the door and buzz people in and out. And they also monitor our jail cells. So if you would go up to the center, you would see TV monitors, and they keep an eye on our prisoners while police officers are not in there. And those are services they do not provide to any other communities within the dispatch center. So we needed to monetize that as well. That is put in there. Essentially, we took what a community service officer would be and took 25% of that fully loaded cost, deducted that from the gross rent, and that gets you a amount of $49,333 a year, which is no insignificant amount. So this would take effect 1/1 of 17, so we'd get a full amount this year, and then would go up by CPI in subsequent years.
1/1 of 17 or 18?
17.
So this retroactive?
Is, yes.
Okay.
So they had budgeted this amount for this year.
Makes sense to certainly make it formal.
Eric, weren't we talking about moving the center out? I sort of remembered that, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right, Trustee Kargi. Those had been ongoing discussions, and so, like everything else, it's looking for a place for them to go and trying to find that and find one that's that makes sense for them. So we're continuing to keep our eye on that. It's not a high-level priority at this point, more of a probably a mid-level priority. So I'm hopeful that the center can expand further. And although they did a great job with their internal renovation that they did, so they have some room for some additional expansion up in the center, but it would be nice at some point for the center to grow even larger and be on course with like a DuPage, DuCom, or Northwest Central Dispatch that are to get into the 15 to 20 type communities, and then they would definitely have to find a larger space. So I'm hoping that it becomes somewhat of an organic move in relation to an expansion effort, but I can't guarantee that.
So under the term, they can terminate on 15 months notice, we can't terminate though, which I'm fine with. I just want to make sure I understand.
No, we can terminate under 15 months.
Yeah. Both. Right.
It's both.
Oh, okay.
How does the revenue work for them again?
So essentially each year right around this time, they create their budget, and the board of directors, which is myself and the village managers and administrators of the other communities, sit down. And essentially, it is based on calls for service. So how many times?
We have a percentage of that.
Yes.
That we pay them.
Correct.
Are they going to use that whole fund to pay us back?
No, we're keeping them as separate transactions. So we will continue to pay them our amount for whatever our proportionate share is.
I see what you're saying.
And then in return, there'll be another transaction
not
where
in
we will.
Return.
Well, no,
it's
we'll invoice,
expense.
Yeah.
Right.
As a set, yeah, so no return.
No return.
Period, end of story.
Right.
Separate transaction, we invoice them.
So we
for.
Are kind of funding the rent and just because of our percentage as part of the WSD's, the Western Division. Whatever.
You're
fine.
Paying,
no.
Okay.
Paying
for the dispatch service and then at the same time, right?
Two separate transactions. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, if they left and we didn't have a use for the space and let's say another governmental agency wanted to come in here, hypothetically, you could charge them a rent if you wanted to, or a lower rent. It really just depends.
Okay, thanks.
And this is something that other municipalities have talked about this rent charge, but never really did it formally. But now I think it's time. Now that we've expanded, we have other towns, it's probably very prudent to do. On a separate note, I know we had the new director come in. Mm-hmm. Is there any way we could just get them to come and have them come to one of our board meetings and just sort of meet, new
Is there anything you'd like
members?
Them to talk about specifically?
Yeah,
or just kind of like
update
meet?
Us on,
just
you know,
say,
what,
what's wrong?
Okay.
Update
well,
us on, I mean, I know they used to come occasionally and give us little updates
no,
on, what they're up to and
I think we could do that. The other thing I would encourage you to do, if you have time, we could certainly take you through the center. I think you could see the upgraded facilities and new office furniture and stuff. They've really done a lot of good work up there. So we could certainly work that out with
them. Yeah, and because they are part of our community. I mean, I know that Westcom does work with our Citizens Corps and
Well, they're very integrated, especially in our emergency planning when we do all that stuff with TripCom and the pharmaceutical distribution.
Right.
I mean,
so
the radio components, the backbone of that,
So it would be nice to just have faces to names. And
Can we take that whole thing full circle and maybe as a board recognize their fine service to our community?
We can. They do have a telecommunicators week. At some point, we can certainly recognize them at a board meeting coming up, whenever that, I don't remember when that takes place. Okay, we can retroactively.
Well, maybe the director can talk to us about when we see the award.
Why don't we first meet them?
Okay, we'll bring them in.
Then we'll recognize them. Yeah, see if we like
it. I just thought that if they're in the room, we may as well thank them for being in the room.
We'll see what they say first, and then we'll see.
Yes,
just to meet and greet, just to introduce themselves.
Awesome.
It's important, just especially because they're in our building.
Do we vote on this? No. Okay, can we take a good point? Can we take the vote?
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay. All right. We have no executive session tonight.
Oh, I have a couple questions.
Yes.
I noticed that you're going to have a committee workshop on the plan.
Comprehensive plan.
Yeah, comprehensive plan. So is the board, that meeting that we're going to have, weren't we supposed to have a meeting on the comp plan, or is that going to be?
That next week.
That's going to be our COW meeting.
Yes.
Oh, was it in your manager's report? That's why I was a little confused.
I didn't get a chance to see the report.
Okay,
so
I don't think it was on there.
I sent you that separate email to make sure you guys.
Okay. All right, so it wasn't in the manager report, but just let's remember that.
So everyone have that on their calendar Monday, the 16th, the COW. This is to review the comprehensive.
Regular board meeting is the 20th.
Yeah, so that's what John Housley, it's more of kind of getting his kickoff for you guys. He's had a kickoff for the plan commission. He's having a kickoff for all the boards and commissions. That's coming up on the 19th at 7 o'clock here at Village Hall. This is the Village Board touch point.
And the
20th. I'm not reviewing the plan.
No.
That closely.
It's a workshop, basically.
It's a workshop.
Right.
Yeah.
And the 23rd is just a regular meeting.
Yeah. And the 23rd is a board meeting.
Yeah. Okay. You'll have a board meeting that night.
Okay. That was my question.
Okay.
And then I had one more question from residents about the, I know we got an email about the Canadian National Railroad, but there's still some questions and rumors swirling around. Is there an official statement or how do you get, about the Canadian National Railroad at one time now coming back into service? Because there's some folks that are.
Put that letter on our website?
I think this came up because Trustee Vasquez and Hennick saw that on a Facebook post, right. And so I'd reached back out. And this has been an ongoing rumor since I've worked here, and so I reached back out to the folks at Canadian National. I think I sent you them his response.
You did.
We can
put it out there.
Yeah.
And I think,
where would you like us to put it out there, on Facebook?
I don't know. Is there an official on our webpage?
If we're within earshot, we can say it's on the village website. What they're up to.
Yeah,
sure. Don't let the rumors take over your black card.
And there's concerns because there's actually folks that are selling homes along the railroad, right. And those are concerns of future prospective buyers to say, does that diminish your property value?
Well, it is a railroad. Keep telling people.
So
make sure that they understand that's a railroad.
So I think it's
torn up. It's a railroad.
Yeah,
exactly.
By law,
they have to maintain the tracks.
Yeah.
So until they officially turn them off,
they don't want to be by a railroad. They shouldn't buy that. All right.
Thank you. Yeah. That was just a comment that was coming through.
Put it on the website, put it on the Facebook, put it all out there.
I honestly don't know where that stuff comes from, just so you know. I
know.
You're kidding?
I know you don't know. Nobody knows, but just start.
Okay.
It just like any other rumor.
Yeah.
people just like, one day they decide to start.
It's I think the deer started.
It's all Facebook. But thank you. I just want to make sure that quells some concerns. Thank you. Those are my two questions.
Maybe that letter to the realtors would be handy, too, since they're affected by it with the home sales stuff.
They know.
Well, I also did at the same time get a email right when that popped. One of a local Oak Park River Forest based realtor had reached out to me asking the same question. So we can do that. Yeah.
We don't want to give you more things to do.
No, it's fine. I know. It's a good point. We don't want false stuff spreading around. I thought, to your point, was about the NICOR.
Yeah,
thing
I thought
that doesn't really
NICOR,
affect
which
us.
Which is even bigger thing. Than
yeah. It's still important. But.
What's NICOR?
Why did I?
We
just don't forget. So there was a damage. I don't know. Remember where it was, but there was a pipeline that was damaged, natural gas pipeline. And so Canadian National has not been responsive to working with NICOR to let them get it fixed. And so there's some concern about having enough natural gas supply in this general area region for the winter months because they can't fix it. So it's the irony of NICOR running into a government issue is somewhat just funny to me because they are very difficult to deal with on a permit basis, so the fact that they're having this problem. But it does could have some dramatic effects if there's not enough natural gas supply to heat furnaces and things like that coming up. So we've seen email traffic, they're all working together trying to resolve that issue. So that's what that issue is.
It's a real issue. But
or we panic about.
Always better to be proactively putting the information out there instead of having the rumors take over. Thank you.
Okay. With that, then, if there's no other general comments, I'd ask to...
Motion to adjourn.
Adjourn. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed. We are adjourned.